You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, I'll have a conversation with someone in the food world I think you'll want to hear from. He is the owner of Juliet, a restaurant in the Galleria area. Jamie Allen, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you? Thank you for having me.
I'm doing well. It's good to have you here. This actually evolved. We were accidental dinner companions at a pop-up a few weeks ago and kind of hit it off. And I realized that, you know, Juliet's been around for a couple of years now and I still haven't had you on the show. So I'm glad you're here.
Yeah. Thank you, man.
So, I mean, just start at the beginning. I mean, talk a little bit about kind of your life prior to getting into the restaurant business. I don't think many people know that you have a background like in accounting and working for one of the big firms.
Yeah, so I went to school at Lamar University, and I my major was accounting. I did some internships over at PricewaterhouseCoopers for 2 years, and then I signed on to Ernst & Young. I ended up working at Ernst & Young for a little while. After I left accounting, I opened a tax office, and I got up to three tax offices. They were doing well, and I was looking for something to do with the money from tax season. So that's kind of how I stumbled into, I guess, the food space. I opened up a to-go daiquiri business in 2014, and it grew to through 13 locations. And then, you know, during COVID, it exploded. And, you know,
I want to spend some time on Candy Shack because that is okay. Kind of the key component of your origin story, but just take half a step back. How did you decide, like, because other people would just like sock that money into index funds and be like good with a, you know, a decent rate of return. What was it about owning your own business or getting into the food space that appealed to you as like a side hustle really to your main business at the time, which, as you said, was running these tax offices?
I think for me, like wanting to do a daiquiri space, a daiquiri concept. So I have family from New Orleans and things like that. And I had seen it prior to, but it hadn't really been done yet in Houston. It wasn't popular yet. It was popular in New Orleans, Louisiana and stuff like that. And I didn't know that you could actually get a license to do to-go alcohol in Texas. So I thought it would be interesting to do that. I don't know. I think I just wanted a challenge. I wanted to try something different. And so I did.
All right. So tell me a little bit about creating Candy Shack, because as you said, you didn't have a background in this stuff. You weren't familiar with the laws governing the sale of alcohol and all that stuff. So talk a little bit about how you kind of created this concept, and then we'll talk about how it took off in COVID in a second. But just kind of take people through the beginning of building that business.
So initially, when I did it, there used to be a place called Eskimo Hut, and when I was in college, and I thought about it. I don't know what made me think about it. I randomly thought about it. It was like a little drive-through place, and I was like, man, I wonder if they could do it in Beaumont. I wonder if we can do it in Houston. So I started doing a little research, and I found out that they do have They did at the time have liquor licenses where you could do to go alcohol. So I kind of started with the concept and I was like, man, you know, it'd be cool if the drinks look fun. Like instead of just having a plain, boring styrofoam cup, what if we could put in a clear cup and you could see all these different colors and then we put candy and fruit on top and make the drink fun and people want to come buy the drink. You know, kind of like, almost like a, like they have the fun Mexican candy drinks that I would see, like the micheladas and stuff like that. So I was like, man, I wonder if we could do something like that. And I started it. And of course, the fruit didn't last. What I found out quickly was that fruit goes bad very fast. So I ended up taking all the fruit off and then, you know, just kind of going with the whole candy concept and calling it Candy Shack Daiquiris because candy, the shelf life on candy is obviously, you know, way longer than the shelf life
right. Functionally infinite for your purposes, right? You were gonna you were gonna sell the candy way faster than it was ever gonna go bad on you.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So you have this concept and it's doing okay, and then COVID hits, and all of a sudden bars are closed, and you have like essentially the only game in town, right? A to-go facility that sold drinks. So talk about what that was like.
Man, it was kind of like a whirlwind because I mean, COVID hit. I mean, I remember I was out at the club. I literally went out to a club on Saturday night. I want to say it was like March 15th is when the city shut down. So it was like March 14th, 2020. And the next day they're like, okay, everything's going to shut down until we figure out what's going on. I was like, shut down? You know, so they closed everything, liquor stores, bars, restaurants, all the businesses were supposed to be closed. So of course we closed as well. It was like, ever changing. So a few days later, they're like, all right, so if you have a to-go restaurant, because people were complaining, you know, they still want to eat and go to the grocery stores. So they said essential businesses only. And essential was, the initial essential business was like grocery stores, to-go restaurants, liquor stores still weren't open, right? So I have this to-go daiquiri business, you know, people need liquor. So they're like, all right, we're just going to go to Candy Shack and buy drinks. So the business ended up, you know, pretty much exploding during COVID. Even when they opened the restaurants back up 50%, or, you know, they said that, you know, you could do different stuff. I mean, it just kept going. It stayed busy all the way through 2021, like to the end of 2021, like slam packed.
But you managed the logistics really well too. So, you know, say a little bit about kind of how you kind of managed that to get it to the point where it was very efficient. It was running very lean, at least from a margins perspective.
So what I did, because I was positioned perfectly during COVID, I had already had all the locations. I had started purchasing my own mix. So I created my own line of Candy Shack mix, which was one of the big things. That was one of our larger costs. It was probably the biggest cost, the mix for me. So I created my own line of Candy Shack mix and I would order it like literally by the pallets, right? I would get it. I got it. Picked out the flavors, got it manufactured. So we private labeled all of our mixes. I then started ordering cups from Taiwan that came in pre-logoed. So I was getting the cups at pennies on a dollar. And because I was able to go through so many daiquiris, we were able to order. I could spend, you know, $25,000, $30,000 ordering cups and fill up my warehouse full of cups because we were going to use them anyway. So I was able to really streamline and get my food cost all the way down. I was at one point, I was, you know, running probably somewhere between 12 to 15% food costs. That includes a cup, candy, alcohol, daiquiri, everything out the door, 12 to 15%.
Right. And, you know, for people who like in a restaurant model, you know, a food cost of like, you know, 30 to 35% is more typical. So you're running a bar concept at essentially a third to a half of what a successful restaurant would run at in terms of its food cost.
Oh yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And then, you know, being at the concept was not very labor heavy. It wasn't very labor intensive because we were only ever able to have so many people at work at one time, right? Like how many people can you have standing there making daiquiris? I may have at most 3-4 people at work, but, and you know, and they're moving as quickly as they can. But yeah, we were really able to, you know, push out a lot of daiquiris during COVID. Even pre-COVID, we did really well, but COVID, you know, definitely took the business up. I would say 7-8x.
All right. Are we allowed to tell people how you celebrated your success? What you treated yourself to?
No, I'd keep that one.
Oh,
one.
That's fair. All right, you bought a nice car. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I bought a nice car. I did buy a nice car with all the success and all the hard work.
All right. So you have these daiquiri concepts, and they're doing well. What sort of inspired you to be like, okay, I have this business. It's good. I want to see what's next. I want a restaurant.
So truthfully, I don't know if me and you talked about this, but I went to Steak 48, and this is like around COVID time. It's pretty busy. And this is like right around 2020 when they first opened back up, and every restaurant was super busy. And they were gave me and my friend a really hard time on coming in. And I just was like, man, I'm gonna just open up my own restaurant. It was so hard to get reservations. It was like a nightmare during this time. I'm not sure if you could. I mean, you of course probably didn't experience the same troubles as me, but it was just so hard to always get a reservation. My friend had on, you know, he had on some tuxedo pants, and you know, they said at Steak 48, they were like, oh, it resembles, it looked like, you know, athletic wear or whatever they wanted to say. So they didn't want to let us in one day, and I just got mad, and I'm like, you know, I just open my own steakhouse and just go there. So that's how Juliet came about.
All right. So how did you kind of decide on the theme? Because for anyone who's been there, you know, you have that kind of movie theater looking lobby, and then you go through the doors like you're going into a movie theater. But of course, that's where the restaurant is. So talk about kind of creating that branding, or that, you know, that kind of false entrance, and kind of developing that concept for the restaurant. Because I say this, I just say, like, most steakhouses, right, you go in and there's a hostess stand and there's the restaurant. You added like a more theatrical element to that design.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I was trying to get at with Juliet, I just wanted to create something different. As I did with all of my concepts, even with Candy Shack daiquiris, right? Like, I put the candy on the daiquiris. I changed the cups from styrofoam to clear so you could see the different colors. I didn't use, like, you know, all of my daiquiris were actually like pre-made individual flavors versus like a base mix pumped with flavors pumped into it. So I actually went above and beyond to try to make the concept different. So I wanted I wanted Juliet to be creative. I wanted it to be something that I felt hadn't really been done before. And through my travels, I had seen other speakeasy style concepts, mostly bars. I had never really seen a restaurant be done. And I, you know, I was trying to think, and to be honest with you, the movie theater thing came up because I thought of different things that I could make the front of the restaurant be without spending a lot of money. Right. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll make it a laundromat. But then I'm like, okay, that might be kind of expensive with the machines and things like that. Whereas with the restaurant, it's just a small build out. I mean, excuse me, with the movie theater, it's just a small build out, right? You need a host stand, put some candy in there, do some fake doors, do a movie theater marquee. You know, it looks like it. You put a box,
right? A popcorn machine. You had to have
the popcorn machine. The cost wasn't as heavy as some of the other speakeasy ideas that I did have.
Well, and it let you have that like movie theater marquee above the door, which I think is a nice touch, like kind of completes the look of the thing.
Oh yeah, definitely, man. That thing has been all over the place.
All right. So talk about creating the menu and kind of, you know, because there's a lot of ways you can go classic, you can go fusion, you can go, Lord knows there's Italian steakhouses and Mexican steakhouses and every other kind of steakhouse, especially in Houston where we love steakhouses. So how did you develop that menu and kind of, you know, at what point did you kind of bring someone in on the culinary side to help you tweak everything?
So luckily, I had already had someone that had that experience working for me, Jeff Auld. He started working with me during COVID. Obviously, a lot of stuff was closing, restaurants were closing, things like that. So I was able, you know, luckily to meet Jeff and have Jeff start working with me. And I remember when I had the incident at Steak 48, he was kind of one to help me decide that I wanted to open a restaurant, because he was like, hey man, I know how to cook all of this stuff. I've been doing this for years. That's really my specialty, you know, steakhouses and such. So what I did was I basically took things off of every steakhouse menu that I loved, because I love going to steakhouse. I love going to Mastro's, love going to Steak 48. I've probably been to every steakhouse around the world, you know. So I took all of my favorites and I said, hey, this is the menu that I want. Let's make this menu. And of course, with his assistants, you know, he added some things, like the pork belly that you tried, like, you know, some of those things that he added to the menu, like, hey, these are some must-haves on the menu. You know, we need this to kind of help make a balanced menu that everyone would love.
All right, so I know you like to travel. So what were, are there certain steakhouses in other cities that you would say had the biggest influence on certain menu items or the presentation, or you know, where were a couple of the places that you really took some inspiration from?
So I took some inspiration from a place called STK, which they're coming to Houston now, but I went to the Atlanta STK, the one in Atlanta. This one of the I would say if I had to pick a place, that probably was my biggest inspiration when I was opening Juliet in Houston. Aside from our local steakhouses here.
Right. Safe to say the restaurant's been a hit from day one.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely.
What do you think it is about Juliet that has so resonated with people?
Honestly, man, I often think about that because I wish I had a real answer for you, because honestly, I really don't know. But people love that restaurant. I mean, I've had every kind of athlete, celebrity, you know, every type of Houstonian come, and everyone comes and they rave about the restaurant. They rave about the service. They rave about the food. And I just, you know, and I often think about it, I'm like, man, what is it that people really love so much about it? It's you know, it's a nice restaurant. I think it's, if I had to say one thing, I probably think it's the service. I think it's, while let's say the difference between our service and let's say a Mastro's or a Steak 48 service, our service feels more natural, more friendly, more at home, not so corporate. We're not a corporate restaurant, so it feels like a homegrown, you know, neighborhood steakhouse.
Right. Well, and you experience something that's, you know, sort of specific to very busy, like very prosperous restaurants where they're like, you should feel lucky to be eating there. You
Yeah.
know, like that they kind of treat you like, oh, well, you know, it's a privilege to be dining here and spending hundreds of dollars on this meal. It's like, well, I'm still the customer. Like, I still want to be treated nicely. And in some places you kind of have to lump it. And I think at Juliet, like you know, obviously, like, you know, I ate there last week with you. So we had an incredible service experience because, you know, we're hanging out with the owner. But I was looking around, like I was seeing the way that they interacted with the other guests. And I think there's like a sincerity and like a really deep knowledge of the menu. And you don't always see that at other restaurants.
Yeah, and I would say this, man, my team has done a phenomenal job. The culture at Juliet is phenomenal. And it definitely feels good when you go in there. It feels like, you know, it feels like we treat all our guests like they're family. You know, I definitely would say that.
Right. I mean, you mentioned the celebrity thing. You know, we wrote a story a while back. I know Drake sent his team in to buy dinner for a whole bunch of people that just happened to be there on one night. So say a little more about kind of the celebrity clientele and kind of finding that balance between like giving them the space that they need to not be bothered, but also like being treated like a normal person, which maybe they don't get as often being prominent.
So that's one thing. We absolutely treat everyone the same, right? We want our everyday guests to feel like they're a celebrity when they come. We want to treat you with good service, provide, you know, this, we want the service to be good. We want the food to come out fast. We want it to come out hot, and we want it to be consistent. We want the space to be clean, the atmosphere to be, you know, a nice atmosphere. And you know, the celebrities, when they come in, we treat them just like every other guest. You know, we don't hover over their table. We don't do too much. We don't go, you know, we don't make them feel uncomfortable. We make them feel like, hey, you're at home, you're a regular customer. Come sit down, come enjoy the food, come enjoy the atmosphere. If you need anything, we're here for you. We've had everyone from, you know, Drake, TD Jakes, Megan Thee Stallion, all of the Rockets, the Texans, like Every Texans player, they come and do team dinners. The Texans, the team dinners, the Rockets, team dinners. The Rockets are often there, surprisingly, after the games throughout the season. It's unfortunate we lost last night, but I can always count on a call after a game. One of the players are going to call me, "Hey, we're coming. Can you keep the kitchen open for us?" So stuff like that. Like I said, all the rappers that come in town, the actors, we've had, Cassie, Neo, Terrence J, just the list just goes on and on. And again, very appreciative, when they come in town. We've had other NFL teams, other NBA teams, they somehow found Juliet and they've chosen, to dine with us. And we go above and beyond to take care of not only them, but like I said earlier, every guest. We treat every guest like they're special and they're a celebrity.
All right, so then the other thing I have to ask you about, it's Juliet, is the rose wall in the bathroom. Was that your idea? How did you come up with that? And did you ever imagine that it would be like as essential an aspect of dining there as it very clearly is?
Honestly, I did not think it would be as important as it ended up being. So what happened with that was actually the very last thing I put in the restaurant. So the construction was completely done. That was a blank wall. What I decided to do, or a friend of mine came up with the idea as I was looking for stuff. He said, "Man, why don't you put a flower wall there? Put flowers." And I was like, "Nah, man, that's silly. It doesn't go with the movie theater theme." He's like, "How, man? What do people take pictures in front of weddings in front of the flowers, right?" So I was like, okay, well, so I played with the idea and I was like, man, I got to put the logo on there too. So, just in case if people take pictures in front of it, they can identify where they are. So, that's what I did. And it ended up being like an absolute staple of the restaurant. It's like, if you go to the restaurant and you don't take a picture in front of the rose wall, it's like you weren't there. Pixar, it didn't happen.
Exactly. All right. So, you've been open for, like I said, a couple of years now. Do you have, I mean, what are your goals? I mean, it seems like from my perspective, it must have exceeded your expectations, but do you have a sense of kind of how you want the restaurant to evolve or do you want to do another one? I mean, do you, what do you, what do you, what are your goals?
So right now we're under construction in Dallas. We're opening one in a design district. It's right across from Carbone and right across from since Carbone is over there. I think Delilah's next door to me, the Mexican. So we're right there in the High Line, on High Line in the design district. And I'm excited to get open. We should be open at some point this summer.
And then just the same, like you gotta bring the rose wall, you gotta bring the gold covered steak, you gotta bring all that stuff.
Oh yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun stuff. The Rose Wall will be there, but it's going to look a little bit different than Houston. So this is going to be a surprise.
All right, that's all reasonable. I mean, have you does this do you have other restaurant concepts in mind? I mean, have you kind of gotten bitten by the restaurant bug at this point? Do you have other things you want to do?
I think I have gotten bitten by the restaurant bug. I have opened up some other stuff in the Houston area to kind of keep it going, but obviously Juliet being the most popular.
Well, you're involved with High Key, are you not?
Yes, I am involved with High Key.
All right. So talk a little bit about High Key and kind of how that seemed like a reasonable like next project as you kind of expand your portfolio.
So I love sushi and High Key is really like I would say a worldly concept, because even with the design, with me and Jen Design Group, kind of what we were aiming for was like a worldly concept. A lot of the design came from like my travels in Dubai, London, Miami. I really wanted to bring a space to Houston that they hadn't really seen before, but I wanted the cuisine to match, because a lot of times when people come to Houston or go to restaurants that look that nice, they don't expect the food to be any good. They expect it to be, oh, it's just another pretty restaurant. The food is trash. We'll come get some pictures and never come back. But I think that me and the team that we have over there were able to nail a concept that has good food, a good atmosphere, kind of like an all-around product. We're still waiting to see how Houston fully receives it. I think I wonder if it's too Miami, because we live in a very conservative city. So I don't know if the design is too much, but we'll see. Again, we're still very early, so wait, it remains to be seen.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like no other restaurant in Houston, you know, because I mean, it's got a little bit of that kind of Tokyo vibe, a little bit of that sci-fi, Blade Runner aesthetic. You know, the one component I have to ask you about is the upside down bonsai tree. Because I've certainly never, you know, as a lighting element over the bar, I've never seen anything like it. So whose idea was that?
I believe that was Jen's idea. I did want to put a tree, but I don't think I wanted it upside down. It was her idea to flip it upside down and not make it boring. So she decided to flip it upside down.
It's definitely not boring. It's definitely eye-catching. And you know, I think that restaurant really like I keep seeing influencers go there and stuff like that. It shows very well on social media, I think.
Yeah, I think it shows well, but I'm excited for people to get in and try it and try the food and see the service because we spent a lot of time on the menu. Jeffrey Taylor's the executive chef over there, and you know, me and him work very closely together to come up with that menu, and we just spent a lot of time on it. I spent a ton of time on service and hammering down on service to make sure that the service feels good. It feels, you know, because I want the service standards to you know, match Juliet or be above Juliet. So I spent a lot of time making sure the service was good as well.
Yeah, and I'll say, I mean, I had a meal there, I guess right around the time that the rodeo started. So it's been a couple of months, but you know, I was really struck by, you know, the lobster dumpling certainly stood out. I thought the sushi was quality and consistent with kind of other restaurants in that style. And then I have to say, I really like that you're doing like different kinds of Wagyu because I just think Australian Wagyu is such a sweet spot in terms of price and quality where it's significantly less expensive than Japanese Wagyu and just like more rich and flavorful than American Wagyu, not to disrespect our country's beef industry, but I just think that Australian Wagyu is like a nice, like if you really love steak, like that's a good option for people.
Yeah, I would say honestly, man, if I had to pick a favorite of the different steaks that we have, because even though Haiki is a, say, I like to say it's an Asian restaurant. I don't even want to say sushi, but because we do have sushi, but it's an Asian restaurant. I would have to tell you my favorite would be the Australian Wagyu. So, you know, we probably have more steaks than we have sushi on the menu, to be honest with you. So it's definitely a steak and sushi restaurant. Yeah, the Australian Wagyu is phenomenal. And I'm actually new to the Wagyu stuff. Having met with Chef Jeffrey Taylor, he's the one who kind of introduced me to the different cuts of meat, different options that they have. Because I'm just used to the kind of traditional steak that we have at Juliet. I mean, I'm familiar with Wagyu, Japanese Wagyu, but I didn't know, you know, the different regions. We carry at Haiki, we carry a lot of different regions of steak and a lot of different regions from Japan. We also carry the Australian Wagyu, American Wagyu. So you can get a lot of different cuts of steak, Wagyu steak at Haiki.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to differentiate yourself from, you know, some of these other Pan-Asian restaurants or you know, certainly from a more traditional sushi restaurant is you can have that, you can almost have like a full steakhouse experience if you want it, or you can lean into the small plates and, you know, have a couple of sushi rolls and go that route. And I think that flexibility is going to serve Haiki really well.
Yeah, it's doing okay, man. It's doing okay. So I'm glad that everyone that pretty much I would say majority of people that have stepped foot in there really loved it. And they've been back. I don't think that I've ever opened a restaurant where I've had that many people come back so rapidly. I've had people tell me they've been there, you know, in the little few months we've been open, they've been there 4 or 5 times already. And I'm like, wow, that's a lot. So we're just, you know, working on getting the word out and getting people in there.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think Juliet made such a splash. It's kind of hard to, you know, catch lightning in a bottle like that twice. But, you know, Upper Kirby's a great neighborhood for restaurants and plenty of people like to go out. So I'm glad that it's, you know, maybe more of a slow burn, but I'm glad that it's catching on.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, let me ask you about one other thing, because like I said, we had dinner together, both at your restaurant and at a pop-up. And one of the things you wanted to talk about with me was kind of the sort of the national perception of Houston or, you know, like the Michelin Guide and what restaurants get recognized for awards and that kind of stuff.
Yes, I remember this conversation.
Yeah. You know, and in that sense, I think Juliet has kind of flown under the media radar, and I say that as someone who's responsible partially for what does and doesn't fly under the media. But you know, do you feel like in some sense like you've been a little bit disrespected, or do you just think like, or how do you feel about kind of the coverage you've received or not received in your case?
So I would definitely say I definitely feel like it's flown under the radar. We don't receive a lot of the accolades that I think that we should get. Like we're not a big corporate, you know, we're not a corporate restaurant group. We don't have, you know, corporate restaurant money. Everything that's been done has been natural. And you mentioned a Michelin. It's funny because the Michelin guide started. So Michelin guide is associated with the tires, Michelin tires. And the reason they created that guide was to sell more tires. They would go to different towns and say, hey, you need to visit this place when you're in this town so that people would drive farther so they would purchase more tires. And I don't know if that got lost in translation, because I feel like a place like Juliet, we see so many tourists, so many people come here. You would think that the Michelin would stop by our restaurant as soon as they get there. We are literally what Michelin guide started out as initially. That is what Juliet is through and through. We are a restaurant that you tell people to go to. This is a must go to restaurant in the city of Houston. And even if they don't say that or acknowledge it, people come. You know, it's no mistake that, you know, you get people from all over the place, you know, all over the U.S., other countries. When they visit, they come to Juliet. They really do. I would tell you probably half of our clientele is not from Houston. So to me, that says a lot, considering, you know, where we seemingly are overlooked by, you know, I think slightly overlooked by local media. We don't get talked about. There's no, and again, I remember me and you talked about like James Beard Awards and stuff like that. Maybe our cuisine isn't anything out of the ordinary, but the food is good. The service is good. The atmosphere is good. It's very consistent. And again, it's a fan favorite amongst the people in Houston. And it's a favorite, you know, for guests when they visit town, you know, when they come in town to visit, stop by Juliet. They always make it a point to go.
Yeah, I think Michelin does have that roots as like a travel guide or to kind of to get people to sell more tires. And of course, it's kind of evolved into being kind of a staple for, you know, people visiting from out of town, right? That sort of, you know, recommendations for people who are tourists or visitors. And, you know, I think you can kind of look at what they did in the first year in Houston and be like, yeah, you know, it's like they leaned heavily into barbecue. They did that for all of Texas. And I think part of that is it's because that's what they think people visiting Texas want to know about, right? So they leaned heavily into barbecue. And then I think it's just going to be interesting to see what they do in year two. Cause like, do they get into some more of those hidden gems? Do they spend more time, you know, in Chinatown or down Bel Air Boulevard? Do they get into the suburbs a little more? Do they find some of these places that are really loved by locals? And certainly that's, you know, Juliet has that kind of reputation. You know, there was only, you know, the only steakhouse that got any attention at all is Pappas Brothers. And that's as classic and corporate and as anybody. And so, you know, I certainly don't think it's the definitive word on Houston dining. I think it's been a boon for the restaurants that got the recognition. And I'm excited to be in that international conversation, you know, and to have those comparisons, especially between cities across America. Well, we have this many Michelin stars and this many Bib Gourmands, because it does lend some exterior legitimacy to our food scene, and it gives restaurants something to kind of aspire to. But, you know, at the same time, you know, a full reservation book and a good PPA and having, you know, Drake and the Rockets show up on a regular basis is another measure of success. And I think if you had to give people their choice, like, would you rather have a full reservation book or be in the Michelin guide, they would definitely they take the full reservation book every time.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I agree.
I mean, I assume you've kind of been to some of these other Michelin places, right? You've been to March or BCN or Jardinet or some of those places. And do you take back lessons from those meals?
So some like Le Jardinier and March, those are very, I guess, so they're very like Michelin star-ish, if you will. They're very like the service, the very small plates, the multiple courses of the menu, the creativity of it. I think they were good, but I don't know that that's somewhere you go eat often. You know, I feel like, maybe, once every so often you go there. But I think those places are busy anyway. Marsh, Le Jardinier, I think those places are very busy. I know Pappas Brothers has a phenomenal wine list. They may have the best wine list in the city, if I'm not mistaken, between them and the Post Oak. I know Post Oak has a really good one, but, they share it with Mastro's. Excuse me. But I think that the Michelin star should definitely go around. I'd say that they should go around a little bit more and check out some other stuff for sure.
All right. Well, I have absolutely no influence over what they do, but on the outside shot that there's a Michelin inspector listening to this episode, that I highly encourage them to visit you at Juliet. Well, Jamie, I have to say that does bring me to the end of my questions. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you would like to discuss?
No, man, you did great, man. I appreciate you. Like always, it was great dining with you last week, and we got to do it again soon.
Absolutely. All right. Well, before I let you go, we have to play the lightning round. Five easy questions, five short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
Jamie Allen, what is the one thing that you think everybody has to order when they go to Juliet?
Crispy Thai chili shrimp.
What is the first band you ever saw in concert?
Oh, I think it was Jay-Z, actually.
That's a good answer. What is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a restaurant with a drive-thru.
Okay, McDonald's fries.
What is your favorite Houston sports figure, past or present?
Hakeem the Dream.
Can't go wrong with that. All right, and then finally, what is the new Houston restaurant you went to for the first time recently that you absolutely loved and think other people should try?
You know what? You drew me a blank on there. I'm a cheat and save myself high key.
You know what? I'll allow it. Jamie, give us the website and the social media for Juliet.
JulietHTX.com. And the Instagram is Juliet.HTX.
All right. Jamie, thank you so much for doing this.
Hey, thank you so much. Have a good one.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturalmap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.